It's Lake Effect Weekend from Milwaukee Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Mitch Teich. Not far from downtown Milwaukee, a high-rise hotel project is underway at the casino operated by the Potawatomi Tribe in the Menominee Valley. It's the only such casino in southeastern Wisconsin, but that could change if a plan by the Menominee Tribe to build a new casino in Kenosha moves forward. There were developments on that front recently, and our news analyst Bruce Murphy joins us on the line to talk about them, along with some other stories from the past week. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Mitch. Good to be here.
Nice to have you here, as always. There's a major war in the casino world that is heating up in Wisconsin. Late last month, the Federal Department of Interior gave its approval for a proposal to create a casino in Kenosha. But it leaves it up to the governor whether to approve or not approve, and that has led to this escalation. Let's start with the governor himself. Where does Scott Walker fall on this casino issue in Kenosha?
Well, it's worth noting it's only up to the governor. The legislature has no control over this. So he's the one guy who can decide whether this can be approved. And he's basically said, well, I'm not going to play Solomon and pick and choose between two well-respected entities like the Potawatomi and Menominee tribes. And so I want the 11 tribes in Wisconsin to come to an agreement, and then I'll support that decision. And, you know, that sounds very philosophical and even practical, and I'm sure it will play well statewide. But, you know, I think insiders immediately knew that he was, in essence, siding against the Menominee Casino's bid because the tribes compete with each other for customers. They, you know, you have a lot of casinos here, and the proposed Kenosha casino that the Menominee would run is quite likely to take customers away from the Potawatomi Casino in Milwaukee.
And the Potawatomis hold quite a lot of sway in the tribal world.
They do, and even beyond the tribal world. In fact, it was interesting, the Department of Interior, in announcing their decision, actually mentioned in passing that it was heartening to see how much clout the Potawatomi has in state and local politics. And, I mean, they've spent like $6 million on lawyers and lobbyists since 2001 to try to beat down the Menominee bid. They were very successful installing it for more than a decade. And more recently, you know, they spent on campaign contributions for Governor Jim Doyle in his elections, and more recently spent $150,000 to underwrite the National Governors Association bash here in Milwaukee, which was obviously very important to Scott Walker.
There are economic arguments on both sides of this. How do they shake out?
You've got the Potawatomi saying, you know, we could lose as much as, I think they're projecting, $150 million a year, a third of their revenue. And the city of Milwaukee supports that. They say that Potawatomi could lose 3,000 jobs. But, you know, the Department of Interior officials who do oversee Indian tribes and gaming, they estimated that the impact on the Potawatomi would be pretty modest. So there's that whole side of it. And then there's just the whole, should we have a free market in the casino business? State Senator Mike Ellis came out and said, you know, Walker should support the free market here and just let the casinos compete.
Well, for all the good financial fortunes that the Potawatomi have had in recent years, the Menominees have not done as well.
No, it's really, you know, for anyone who has traveled through Menominee County, it's a very beautiful area, but you can kind of sense the poverty there. About 90% of the residents of that county are Menominee Indians. And any time there's statistics on Wisconsin, that county always shows up with by far the highest unemployment, highest poverty, worse health data, whether it's alcoholism, teen pregnancy, premature deaths. So it's really a destitute county, and this casino could really transform the lives of those people, as the Milwaukee casino actually did earlier for the Potawatomi Indians.
So obviously a lot at stake here. Let's go to back to the governor for a moment and the news late this week that he's canceled a grant from the state to the group United Sportsmen of Wisconsin that has been much in the news of recent days. First of all, what was that grant initially supposed to do?
It's a funny little arcane grant that was going to, quote, introduce youth, women, and others to the state's sporting traditions. In essence, the idea was that some nonprofit group would get funding to teach people about hunting and handling guns, I guess. I mean, some might question whether we need the government to actually pay for something like that.
Beyond that one point, what were the other problems with the legislation as it was written?
You know, Mitch, this is one of those deals where they say you don't want to watch how sausages or legislation are made. I mean, this was a quickie budget amendment that got all of 7 minutes of discussion, got no press coverage. It was clearly intended to hand the grant to this group, United Sportsmen, which has political affiliations. It supported conservative causes, Republican politicians. And the legislation was actually tailored the way it was written so that groups that actually have a long track record in the conservation and outdoor sports field, like, say, the Wisconsin Wildlife Foundation, were not eligible to apply. So, in essence, the grant was never publicized. Only the United Sportsmen group applied for it, and naturally they got it.
And would you make the contention that the United Sportsmen was not an above-board organization?
Well, it's not really me making that contention. I mean, the Journal Sentinel has gone overboard with stories, one after another, raising questions, and it turns out the group is not a nonprofit. It's not registered as such with either the state or the federal government. It's falsely claimed to state officials that it was, and finally it turned out that its leader was convicted and fined for hunting with the wrong license some years back. I mean, given that the group was supposed to be teaching people how to hunt but has no track record actually doing that, I think this violation was the last straw for Governor Walker.
And so does the Walker administration learn a lesson from this?
I don't really know. I think, you know, there's nothing necessarily new about cronyism and bad lawmaking, which surely this is an example of. But the thing that's surprising to me is that this went on, the news coverage on this went on for more than 2 weeks with ever more revelations before the governor canceled the contract. So he certainly had steely nerves on this, but maybe the lesson is next time he should cut the connection with his group a little sooner.
Speaking of interesting publicity, why did the sheriff of Milwaukee County threaten to arrest the head of the House of Corrections this past week?
Well, that is really a crazy story. So apparently he wanted the new head of the House of Correction, Richard Schmidt, to accept some 70 inmates from the county jail downtown. And when Hafeman declined and said we had no room, Clark's number two man, Richard Schmidt, basically said that we're going to arrest you by order of the sheriff for obstructing a law enforcement officer.
And that's clearly not all that was at work here. There is some background that goes well before this particular scenario.
Yeah, I mean, Clark used to run the House of Corrections. In fact, he even changed its name for a while, and I've forgotten the name. Do you remember it? It was a Southeast something, but I think we've all forgotten it. But it's just one funny thing about this. And so basically both the county executive, the county board, wanted him removed from overseeing the House of Correction, as did many of the judges. So the sheriff no longer has control over the House of Correction, but he's still trying to issue it orders. And Hafeman, the new head of the House of Correction, said, well, actually, I can't take these additional inmates because when Clark ran the House of Correction, he had eliminated funding for air conditioning for one of the dorms, and the temperature at the time was 95 degrees, and they just felt they couldn't take any inmates and put them in there.
Now, your publication, Urban Milwaukee, has reported that, that is not the only aspect to this story. There are also canine units at issue.
Yeah, so it's a shaggy dog story. So one of Clark's last acts before relinquishing control of the House of Correction was to transfer all the canine teams from the house and bring them downtown. Actually, County Executive Chris Abley told Urban Milwaukee that for a while he could hear dogs barking at the courthouse. And Clark had written that the dog teams at the jail and the House of Correction were critical to safety, that they were a critical part of the safety element in terms of handling the inmates. And there had been 12 at the House of Correction and 8 at the county jail downtown, and he took all the 12 from the House of Correction and moved them downtown.
Does this particular set of issues have any more potential political fallout for the sheriff than anything else that has put him in the news recently?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, it should be noted that Clark did back down in all of this. He did. Apparently, he's now moving the canine teams back to the House of Corrections. And, you know, there are some people who, you know, Clark has had a lot of appeal as a law and order Democrat and sort of a character with no nonsense views. But I guess the question becomes, is there a point where you cross the line from a character to, you know, something more negative, and does that have a factor when you run for election? I wonder whether all this stuff, he's been in the news so many times, whether this starts to add up when he runs for re-election in 2016.
And finally, Surge Restaurant Group announced this week that, first of all, Ryan Braun's Graffito Restaurant is now just called Graffito Restaurant, and by the end of the year, it will not be a restaurant at all. Obviously, fallout from Ryan Braun's admission and apology involving performance-enhancing drugs continues. This can't be good for the restaurant group.
Well, it certainly isn't. The Surge Restaurant Group has actually been a group that celebrities have been a big part of their appeal. Their restaurant Carnivore has always attracted pro sports stars. That's part of the ambience. And so this Third Ward restaurant, Ryan Braun's Graffito, it was all built around his name. It pretty much rose and fell with his fortune. So this is, you know, obviously bad news for them that they're going to have to close the restaurant.
They have another restaurant already open and one under development that combine the celebrity of Ryan Braun and Aaron Rodgers. What do we know about the 812 restaurants?
Yeah, so the 812, that's for each of their sports numbers. And there was one in Brookfield and another one planned for Bayshore. And I think part of the appeal was, you know, there was a friendship between these two guys, perhaps the two biggest sports stars in the state. Well, you know, now you've had Rodgers distancing himself from Braun, and, you know, the owners are going to have to change the name, change the promotions. So at the very least, it's a lot of marketing money down the drain.
And speaking of marketing money, there are other companies that had associations with Ryan Braun who have ended those associations.
Yeah, so the Wilson Sporting Goods dropped Braun as a spokesperson, and so did the Quick Trip convenience store chain.
Did the Brewers also have to look at changing their promotions? Obviously, it hasn't been an easy year to promote anything if you're the Brewers.
No, it's a dreadful year. I mean, obviously, they have a lot of money wrapped up in Braun, not just in terms of his contract, but in terms of the team's identity and how it's been promoted. And so there are just a lot of reverberations here. I mean, sports is really big business, and it's a really big American business, and you can really see this playing out here.
Perhaps the solution is next year Bruce Murphy or Mitch Tyke bobblehead night.
I like it. I like the idea.
Bruce, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Bruce Murphy is editor at the news and opinion website UrbanMilwaukee.com and our regular Lake Effect Weekend news analyst. As the NFL season opens, the league is partnering with a Wisconsin company to try to better diagnose brain injuries. We'll learn about that partnership when Lake Effect Weekend continues on Milwaukee Public Radio.